This is Tofu Day with another edition of Between the Covers on your community radio station, WCOMLP Chapel Hill. And Harper, I'm really pleased today to have the author of a really interesting book, Thomas Ricks, the author of Waging a Good War. It's a military history of the civil rights movement from 1954 to 1968. Hello, Mr. Ricks. Glad to have you with us today.
Thank you for having me.
Thomas, you know, I read your book. I was actually a participant in the civil rights movement as a young man. My parents took me to civil rights demonstrations. And what first attracted me to your book was the unusual subtitle, A Military History of the Civil Rights Movement. Could you explain to the listeners what it is you mean by attaching that phrase to a history of the civil rights movement?
Sure. I come from a military history background. As a journalist, I was a war correspondent, Somalia, Bosnia, Haiti, Kosovo, Afghanistan, and most of all, Iraq. And I'd written several books of military history. I was reading about the civil rights movement out of personal interest, very personal. My wife was a member of high school friends of SNCC during the civil rights movement. And I was always intrigued by it. We'd be driving along, listening to NPR, and somebody would be talking, and she'd say, oh, I knew that person, or I worked with that person in the Washington office once. So I was sort of reading just to understand some of her stories. But the more I read, the more I said, wait a second, this is a military-style operation. The risks are great for civil rights workers out in the field, as they are for soldiers in war. And the tasks they're performing often are similar to military tasks. Recruiting, what kind of people do you need? Training, how do you prepare people to do a sit-in or a freedom ride on a bus where they might be burned to death, or a demonstration? Logistics, how do you get 250,000 people to Washington for the Great March on Washington in August 1963, and how do you get them back out? And how do they pull it off without a single person being arrested?
So now this is interesting. Let me interrupt for a minute, Mr. Ricks, the author of Waging a Good War. Now, when you say a military history, you're not meaning to say that they were storing ammunition and guns, but you're making, I guess it's more an analogy to when you're engaged in any sort of political, physical battle, that you need to think both strategically, long range, and tactically, what do you do today to get to what your strategic goal is. Is that what you're trying to say here?
That's exactly right. What I'm trying to say is that you can't understand the civil rights movement fully, and you can't really appreciate its accomplishments unless you use some of these military perspectives. How did they bring to the movement such dignity, such discipline, and such dedication? It doesn't happen by accident. It comes through long, hard discussion and training and preparation.
And one of the things I found most interesting in your book, well, two things actually coming to mind. You talk about some people that have not gotten the public recognition because they were these sort of supply chain organizer types. They weren't the people on television. So I'd like is for you to tell us some of those names and why they were so important to the success of the civil rights movement. Who were these people that were often in literature referred to as the Jimmy Higgins of the movement, the workers who made it all happen but didn't go out and get the attention that some others did? Tell us about them.
Thank you. And in fact, some of these people actually avoided the limelight on purpose. Bob Moses, who was the commander of the Freedom Summer of 1964, the invasion of Mississippi with the ground force, basically. Bob Moses avoided the limelight, didn't like to be on TV, and in fact wound up changing his name because he did not want to be a celebrity in front of the microphone. These are people who should be on America's postage stamps. Septima Clark is one who comes to mind, the daughter of a slave. She was a trainer in the movement for years, a beautiful trainer. How do you prepare small town people who have never held power? How do you prepare them to confront a racist, violent sheriff? How do you prepare them to make a long distance phone call when they've never had a telephone in their house? How do you hold a meeting sometimes with powerful political officials? And they taught them these things. Septima Clark is one of them. Dorothy Cotton was another one. And they're a diverse, fascinating group. Fred Shuttlesworth, given sufficient attention. He's a minister in Birmingham. He's bombed twice. He's a former moonshiner turned minister.
Oh, that's right.
And an extraordinary guy who would argue with Martin Luther King violently before they went out and did a march together. Because they said, if you're going to ask people to put their lives on the line, you have to hear them out.
And one of the things so interesting also in your book is you really got into a discussion of some of the, what you just called violent, but we mean verbally violent, heated discussions that some of these people had with the more recognized leadership. And you point out how those kinds of disagreements among friends are so important to any successful organization, any successful movement. And you also point out, I believe if I had it right, that at the times when these disagreements became muted or unspoken for many different reasons, the movement itself often became less successful in its tactics. Did I miss something there, or do I have it right?
You have it right. You've got to explore your disagreements. Why do we disagree? What are we not seeing here? What are you thinking that I'm not understanding? You've got to develop that, because in that way you develop trust. And you have to trust the person on your left and your right. Another way the civil rights movement did this was to have people march by neighborhood. So in Selma, for example, when you marched with the people from your block, which is a brilliant way of making sure that people feel more comfortable. They have cohesion. They're not marching with strangers. They're marching with people they know and they have to live with. In this way, you maintain discipline and you keep people from deserting, from running away, because they're not overtaken by fear.
You know each other. You have confidence. And another point you made in your book, and I want to give a call out to the Highlander School. I'm a big proponent and supporter of the Highlander School. They happen to have a website called highlandercenter.org. If any of our listeners want to take a look at that and learn more about the Highlander School. But the point I want to make here is that you point out in the book how some of the core organizers to the civil rights movement were trained. There was very intense training of all of these core people, much of it at the Highlander School, but also in other schools established by the movement, where they actually practiced how to respond nonviolently to the violence that was pushed upon them in some of these occasions. And that was a very interesting point to be made in this.
Training is so important. And the movement paid enormous attention to training, which is something I think has been forgotten now. Before the sit-in demonstrations in Nashville in 1960 to integrate lunch counters in downtown Nashville, James Lawson, another one of the great heroes of the movement who should be better known, spent months working in a basement, church basements, role-playing. Okay, now you five people are sit-in students. You five people are mobs attacking them. And they slug them. They push them off a chair. Sometimes they put out cigarettes on their backs. And then they would reverse. And the people who had been the sit-in demonstrators would then role-play the mob attacking them. What this does, among other things, is teach the human body and mind to overcome that most basic instinct of fear or fight, flee or fight. rather than run away, rather than confront, you had to learn a new way. And that was crucial to the understanding how to do this.
That's an important point.
How to be attacked and not respond with an attack or by running away. It's not a normal human response.
Thomas Ricks, the author of Waging a Good War, a Military History of the Civil Rights Movement, 1954 to 1968. Thomas, you know, I could talk to you for another hour about all this, and at some time I will, but we are on the radio and we just don't have time. Any final words for the Chapel Hill, North Carolina listenership, what you'd like them to think about for today?
Sure. One takeaway from this, the summary I would say, is the civil rights movement was not about passive. It was the opposite. It was about confrontational nonviolence. Somebody bops you on the head, you don't slug them back, but you come back the next day with two more people, and on the third day with four more people. And you come back, and you come back, and you come back, and you don't give up.
Mr. Thomas Ricks, author of Waging a Good War, We Won't Give Up. Thank you very much for being with us today. Again, this is Tofu Dave, another edition of Between the Covers, a literature quickie on your community radio station, WCOMLP, Chaplin and Carver. See you again next time.